Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing deals for their members. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Tri-Tip Roast, Untrimmed Twin Pack, just $4.99 per pound. Signature Farms Boneless Skinless Chicken Breasts, Thighs, or Wings. Buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Progresso Soup, 18 to 19 ounce selected varieties. Buy two, get four free when you buy six. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
Loser, loser, loser.
Witch hunt, scam, hoax.
You're going to literally see the craters on the moon with your own eyes.
My name is Joe Biden. Can't sing, can't dance. Can't do much of anything.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
Well, good afternoon on a Friday, and we have plenty to talk about, so let's get right to the roundtable. First and foremost, Sue Thomas, how are you? Good afternoon.
I am fine. Thank you so much.
Did you survive Snowmageddon 2 this morning?
Well, I'll tell you what, traffic wasn't that great, but it's a Friday, and it was lighter because traffic's lighter on a Friday. Do you want me to wax philosophic about traffic? It was could have been worse,
yeah,
it could.
Well, the roads are pretty good. We'll kind of talk about that this afternoon. We're going to lead with that, but let me introduce the panel here, as Sue will be with us throughout the afternoon. Jane Duker is back with us. Hi, Jane.
How are you?
Pretty good. I texted Jane last night. I said, wow, we're really struggling for topics tomorrow, right?
I'm like, where to begin?
Oh, my goodness. State Rep. Steve Butts also with us this afternoon. Steve, how are you?
Great to see you, Mark. Happy New Year.
And also, Tim Fitch, former St. Louis County Councilman and former St. Louis County Police Chief. There actually was a day this afternoon, earlier this week, Tim, you were on, where I think we worked in about 65% of the roundtable panel, like in one show. But how are you, Chief Fitch?
I'm doing great. Hey, before you move on, can I throw out a shout out to our very own Sue Thomas?
Apparently, you're going to.
Always.
Yes.
She didn't
of
know
course.
I was going to say this. So,
no.
Sue, you got some direct X messages from a friend of mine who was trapped in Chicago. He flew in from Tokyo.
Oh, that's
and
right.
He was trying to get back to St. Louis, and you actually answered him on messages. So I didn't know if people knew that service was available from Sue.
Oh, personal now traffic. Gonna kill you.
Personal traffic, absolutely.
Personal traffic. Paul Piacek is his name, retired city lieutenant, one of my colleagues at work. So I told him I would shout out for you, and thank you for doing that.
Thank you.
You have to sign up for a subscription, I think, for the personal service.
He was in Chicago, and his flight canceled. He said, do you think I could take 55 in the next day? So that's all it was. It wasn't like, I'm leaving my house, can I get to blah, blah.
But that's still helpful.
It's still personal
service.
Sue in
the loo and travel
tips. Thanks for
taking care of
us. Exactly. You're welcome anytime.
Well, we're going to talk about the apocalypse in California here in just a little bit. But let's start with what's happened around here with the weather. And Jane, I'll start with you because there was a lot of confusion earlier this week. And I mentioned, I think there's a tale of two locations or maybe three or four locations. Because when I left work the other night, I was going to play pickleball off a place called Paddle and Pickle off Olive. So I took 40 to the Interbelt, almost got smashed on the Interbelt because the ramp wasn't very good. Got off at Olive. It had appeared like there wasn't even a plow that had ever touched Olive Boulevard. I was shocked by that. My neck of the woods in the Fenton area seemed a lot better off. Even out in Chesterfield, there were spots, and maybe even still today, where it was unsafe to get on. You know, that used to be your neck of the woods, to get on 40 from 141.
That surprises me because it's...
Well, right. So
I'm
what
seeing a
happened?
Very big difference from Chesterfield and the city as far as, you know, being able to get your car out. I think there's a failure, frankly. I think the state and the locals have problems. And, you know, I think people are frustrated in a way that they haven't been before. And I get it. I was talking to our co-panelist here, Representative Butts. And, you know, the side streets are so bad in the city. And they're like, well, that's the policy. And I'm like, but that doesn't mean citizens have to put up with that. I mean, you know, I don't get it. Get a plow that can actually go down a side street. I don't understand. I mean, I came from a place where everything was plowed.
Right, but in the city on the side streets, you got cars that are parked
there. Yeah, we all park on the street. Right. None of us, we all have garages in the city, but we have more stuff than county people. It's just a fact.
So you have to park on the street.
There's been studies done about this.
You're hoarders,
yes. We all have two car garages. We have more stuff. So, Sue, back
me up
here.
Well, the people on
Skyrock. None of us can park in our garages. We're always like, how do county people have so much less stuff?
You know, when I lived in his neighborhood, and I never parked in my damn garage. I kept my firewood in there. I kept everything in there.
Did you really? See, I parked cars in the garage like a person.
Like a normal
but
human.
This is not normal in that area.
Yeah, thank you. Make that clear.
But Steve, you actually pointed out, you know, one thing, maybe I'm not trying to let anyone off the hook here, but we used to have winters in St. Louis, and we haven't had them.
Yeah. You know, this snow event, I mean, this used to be, years ago, kind of a normal snow event. I think it was complicated on the snow removal for MoDOT and the county and the city, that underneath 1.5 inches of sleet that was like hard as a rock was certainly part of the problem. But clearly, we've never known how to drive in the snow in St. Louis because we don't get that much of it. But we really haven't had to drive in the snow for like a decade.
Yeah, and I got to tell you, in my area, West County, I live in the city of Baldwin. The city of Baldwin did a great job. Absolutely wonderful.
Well, you know why?
You can eat off the street.
They got all the drivers from
Absolutely.
St. Louis County.
Absolutely. They recruit
they
from,
did.
Because they pay better than anybody.
They pay $7 to $10 more in the city of Baldwin.
However, so, I actually live on Clayton Road, which is a county arterial road.
Which
so that means
been.
it's taken care of by the county. So if people don't know, if it's a numbered highway like 141 or Olive is 340.
Yeah, 340.
Those
right.
are state maintained.
Correct.
So if you're upset about Olive not being plowed, Mark, that's the state, okay? And if it has a letter, like McKenzie has a letter, that's a state route as well, a
right.
lesser-traveled state route, but it's a state route. And everything else in unincorporated is St. Louis County. And I didn't see Sam Page come by my house driving the snowplow. I saw the commercials that were on for him driving snowplows. Did you see that?
Well, but don't worry, though, because Wesley Bell called them and said, make sure my mom's street is plowed, and it got plowed. So,
tell me that didn't happen.
Oh, it did happen. And in fact, they lost 8 drivers just in September because of the pay raises in the municipalities. Wow. So this idea that somehow he's blaming the county council for not appropriating money, I mean, he has, you know, like what, his spokesperson makes $200,000 a year, which I think, frankly, is completely unconscionable for any public servant in you know, at that level
you
to make that
kind of
money.
You should be paid that much if you're going to lie all the time.
Ooh,
well, apparently,
that's not just a comms director position, though, is it?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Sure it is.
What?
He's his
yes.
PIO, basically.
So why don't you take $50,000 from him
and give it to
the snowplower?
You got a comms person making $200,000?
Yeah, it's on the portal. You don't even have to trust me. Just go to the St. Louis County portal. I think that's obscene for a public servant communications person to make that kind of money. I don't think it's justifiable at all. So if you know, and the people who are actually providing services, like needed services to the public, you know, they can't get more than $12 or no, I think it's $18 an hour.
For the county, yes.
Yeah. Well, what did you expect to happen? And then when you have a county councilwoman go down to the department and harass the remaining employees, I mean, I don't know how
was
you could
Mark's
govern
good
any
friend,
worse.
Lisa Clancy.
Wait, what happened there?
Lisa Clancy went
I missed
down
that story.
And
what
started
happened?
Tormenting, you know, the existing employees and saying, oh, you're trying, you know, you're the ones that are trying to get rid of these employees. You're starting all this. I mean, she got into drama. In the streets department.
Take some of the pressure off the city's problems.
Did you hear what he said? Fitch is like, that's what she does best.
Yeah. And here's the other thing. You know, the mayor's father's street is really nicely plowed. People actually went up to check.
We'll get to the mayor's father here in just a moment. But let's segue, because as much as this has been difficult and annoying and a big pain in the ass and dangerous in some, you know, circumstances as well, nothing compared to California. And Steve, I'll start with you, because you were just out there a couple of weeks ago. You're also, your regular gig outside of being a state rep is you're an insurance guy and have been for a long time. It's really hard to put this into words what we've been seeing and witnessing the past few days.
Yeah, this is a natural disaster with, I'm sure, some human fault, but the size and scope of this fires in Los Angeles County. And I think, you know, we're all used to hearing about wildfires in California. And yeah, I do get out there quite a bit. I'm going back in 2 weeks. But that being said, what's different about this one is, of course, it is in inner core suburban areas where, you know, there's just many, many, many more homes than we're used to seeing. And a bunch of these homes were not the ones that are built right into the pine forests. If you've been in some parts of California, you're like, this was not a good idea to build a house here. This looks dangerous. But in these areas, I know it's unique with their topography, but this crazy combination of the 80-mile-an-hour Santa Ana winds, which are an annual occurrence, but this is much faster, more powerful than normal. That and then this shower of embers that blew. And the fuel for this one is not so much the dry underbrush. The fuel for this one is people's homes. That's really, really the fuel for this one. And that's what makes it so devastating. I don't know what else to say. They need all the support they can have. How you rebuild, even begin to rebuild, and get your mind psychologically around rebuilding a life. I don't know, because it does look like an atomic bomb.
I don't know either. Yeah, it's not, you know, we've heard in, and I've compared this to the F5 in Joplin times like 20.
Yeah.
Because we've seen devastation in, you know, along these lines, even with hurricanes. You know, these poor people out in Florida and in the Carolinas, they still haven't been helped. And now you got this. Now, from an insurance perspective, Steve's going to hang out. We're going to talk about this in the 5 o'clock hour a little bit, but that's a real tricky situation. And by the way, the rest of us are probably going to end up paying more for this in the long run anyway, right?
Yeah, I mean, we are. You know, I always say in insurance, you know, it's people say, why did my rates go up? I didn't have a fire. I didn't have the loss. But, you know, really the way the industry works, the people that don't have the claims, it's their premiums that go to pay the premium people that do. That being said, the scope of this is so large, and California has got these crazy unique state laws that prevent rates from going up as quickly as they can, for example, in Missouri, or artificial caps, all affects the availability of coverage. And when you have a state the size of California, I mean, they are such a huge part of the U.S. economy. It there's just no comparing what it is. There's like 10 million people in Los Angeles County. The state of Missouri has 6.2 million.
Yeah.
So just to put it in perspective.
Staggering. Right. Staggering.
Well, and then FAIR. I don't know if you know what FAIR is in California, the insurance, the state insurer.
We have the state. We have the same acronym here.
They have $700 million in the bank to pay out. $700 million to pay out claims. This is going to be well into the probably double digits
of billions.
Hundreds
of
billions.
So then what happens is it falls on the insurers. Well, State Farm has already pulled out of that area 70% of their policies before this happened.
Correct.
Probably a good decision. So it's going to be interesting to see how this gets paid for. I don't see it going anywhere but to the federal government.
I don't either.
Yeah. I
what I'm concerned about is, I mean, it doesn't look like that this is going to stop anytime soon. I mean, these are popping up.
Well, that's a good point. Look, there are more fires today.
Yes.
The good news is some of the earlier fires, even the Palisades, but we can't say much. Look, they say now it's like 10% or 4% contained.
Yeah, it's
big
still,
deal, right? It's still burning
today.
Out there.
What's
and
left?
The high wind warnings, we're looking at winds right now that are 30 to 40 miles an hour in Santa Clarita, Calabasas, Malibu. That's enough to spread fires. Right now, they're not the 90, 99-mile-per-hour winds, but those might kick up as well, and they have some of these red flag warnings into next week. I thought this was interesting from a history perspective. There's a guy by the name of Mike Davis. He passed away, but he wrote a book in the early 90s about some of the things that were happening in Los Angeles, including the Rodney King riots, and you know we've seen crazy things in Los Angeles. But he followed up his book called City of Quartz with a book called Ecology of Fear, which kind of looked at some of the other things that were happening or potentially could happen, including with wildfires. And chapter 3 of that book, Ecology of Fear, is entitled The Case for Letting Malibu Burn. It begins by noting that LA's pre-European residents, the Chumshaw and the Tongva Indians, actually set small fires in the hills of Pacific Palisades in Malibu to clear out the brush that would explode if left in place. And this author notes that there was a guy, Richard Henry Danner, who wrote in his classic 2 Years Before the Mast that when he first sailed up California, and this goes back to 1826, he saw a fire engulfing Topanga Canyon. And so there's history for all this stuff. Now, the difference is back in certainly 1826 and also back in the, I'd even say in the 1980s, all of these homes didn't exist the way they do right now. The other part of this is, I mentioned this the last couple of days, Steve, you know this. So the rainy season's coming up in California, probably in maybe just a couple of weeks. Now, they haven't had rain since last May. Well, now there's less vegetation, so you're going to see
mudslides
in a couple of weeks. This is going to go on.
It is. You know, it's a beautiful place. The climate is awesome. If you go there, you know, like, I know why people have moved here. But if you just look at the population growth, and I know people saying, oh, they're leaving California in droves. I have this debate with my Republican counterparts in Jeff City all the time. I'm like, when was the last time you were there? I mean, I'm there all the time, and you won't see what you guys are talking about. But the population growth just in our, since we were teenagers in this room, is unfathomable. And to Mark's point, there were not houses built on those hills in with thousands and thousands of locations. Similar to the problems
in
Florida.
With the hurricanes in Florida.
Correct.
I have a place in Florida.
It is similar.
Hit by three hurricanes in the last 6 months, and now in the places that are rebuilding back on the beach, they're most susceptible. You're paying cash for those homes, and you're carrying liability insurance only.
Yeah. Right.
That's how they're rebuilding.
Well, and that's what's going to end up happening here. But what happens to the people who don't have the cash to rebuild? Where do they go? And how do they get houses? Because if you're a property owner with a house that hasn't burned down, the value just probably went up by 20%.
I'm sure it did.
And I see John Goodman lost his house out there also.
Well, there are a lot of celebrities that have lost things. Yep. Yeah. I was telling Steve,
nasty people who have said they deserve it.
Well, we'll get to that here in a sec. But I was telling Steve, I have a great segment. I'm very much looking forward to it in the 5 o'clock hour. There's a really cool documentary, and I love music, and Steve Butz is a musician who loves music, called Norman's Rare Guitars, about this guy who has this vintage guitar shop that is in Los Angeles. And one of the guys that's featured in that is a guy by the name of Taylor Goldsmith. One of my favorite bands is Dawes. He's married to Mandy Moore, actually.
Okay.
Well, Taylor and Griff, his brother, who's the drummer in that band, I love these guys. They lost everything. They lost all their guitars. They lost all their recordings too. They probably lost, you know, maybe it's digital and you can transfer it, but they lost recordings. They lost everything. That's just one small sample. There are people that have been just wiped out by these fires. Businesses, restaurants that were legendary out there that are no longer there.
It's hard to look at. It's very, very sad. And I just, people who have a negative thing to say about this, I don't know how you were raised or what problem you have, but to cheer in the misery of someone losing their home, I don't care who they are.
Well, so the prime example of that here in Missouri was a professor from the University of Missouri in Columbia, an English professor who went out there and basically was cheerleading for James Wood's home being burnt down. And she, Karen Piper is her name. And one of the things that was funny is that she tweeted that out a couple of days ago. It got a lot of attention. There were a couple of sites out there like End Wokeness that really amplified it. And then she retweeted or she tweeted again after taking the tweet down. And she said, this harassment campaign is interesting. If I had time, I would figure out who started it. Well, there was a legendary community note that was attached that basically says she did. Karen Piper posted just one day ago, James Wood's house is burning down. It's karma calling. So it's ridiculous. She didn't even apologize for it. She didn't seem apologetic. But this is where we are, I guess, in this country right now.
These are the same people that cheered the United Healthcare executive being killed.
Yeah.
Well, that's right.
Same people.
I just don't understand it. And I mean, she's like Melissa Click 2.0.
There you go. All right, hang in there. We have one more set. We're just one segment down. I'm sorry, two more segments to go. Math was never my strong suit. It's the Reardon Roundtable.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, Friday afternoon, taking you into the weekend. Don't forget, we have all the fun stuff in the 4 o'clock hour. Jane is going to hang out. We'll have Sue's News, Paul Hall on entertainment, and also Mr. Cusimano with some thoughts on the college football playoff and beyond. A little Cardinals news today as well. I mentioned Jane. She's on the panel in the studio with us this afternoon. Also, State Rep Steve Butz and former St. Louis County Councilman, former St. Louis County Police Chief Tim Fitch. We have a fair amount of local stories to get into. Let's start with Kim Gardner. Yeah. Chief, I'll start with you, because we all knew that a lot of this existed, but this, you know, audit that came out from Scott Fitzpatrick, I guess about a week ago, is very revealing, isn't it?
Well, anytime I will tell you that county police officers were caught working another job while they were supposed to be working for the county, they were criminally prosecuted for
Thank
that.
Thank you.
How does she not get criminally prosecuted for doing the exact same thing?
How does she get to keep her law license when she stole taxpayer dollars to defend the license that she now holds?
Well, thank you.
That's on the Supreme Court of Missouri.
It went to the Supreme Court, as you recall.
And they should be ashamed of themselves, especially after reading this. You know, and I sent, not that it'll ever be read, but I sent Mr. Bill Whitaker of CBS News in 60 Minutes the copy of the audit. And I said, hey, do you remember when you came in here into St. Louis and you did that BS story on Kim Gardner?
That puppy.
Trying to paint us as all racist, right? And even at the time, I told Jeff Begays and Bill Whitaker, I said, look, I'll put Democrats in front of you that don't like what she's doing to show you that it's not just evil Republicans like me. But we knew this was going on. The Post was covering some of it at the time. And now, you know, Gabe Gore is stuck with the mess that he's still trying to clean up, Tim.
Somebody needs to write a police report based on the auditor's report, take it over to the circuit attorney's office and say, I'm making a warrant application for stealing.
Well, the feds let her off the hook. Why would we think anybody else will prosecute her? She got a diversion from the feds.
Yeah, but these should be state charges.
I agree, but it's just frustrating.
Make a warrant application and put it in the hands of the circuit attorney.
But realistically, do you think that will happen?
No. I don't think it will happen. Yeah. I think everybody's glad she's gone and they just want it to go away.
But I am glad that he still came out with the report. Because, you know, I don't want people like to revise history all the time. And even though it happened a bit ago, you know, that's the kind of stuff that needs to come out in the hopes that it doesn't happen again.
Jane, the number of cases that she just didn't pay any attention to or dismissed are staggering.
Well, just wait till you see
in the thousands.
Just wait to what you see in St. Louis County. St. Louis County, the prosecutor was not far behind. He was very lucky.
That doesn't surprise me.
He was very lucky that he got to hide under Kim Gardner's skirt, but there were far more cases that were not touched or, like, you know, just blanket dismissals in the county. And I'm very glad that the new prosecutor has agreed. I mean, instantly said there has to be an audit performance. And
you're talking about Melissa.
Yes. Okay. And I want it to come from the state. And there were people, you know, pundits and others saying, yeah, I can't believe she would call in, the Republican state auditor.
Lisa Clancy said, we need to have the county auditor look into this.
It's
because she knows that the county auditor doesn't have the skill set or the personnel to do it.
Correct.
Last time I checked, the county auditor wasn't even an auditor, right? Yeah. Has that changed?
She is now.
Okay.
The new one is relatively new now, but it's not a very efficient or effective
The previous
office.
One member had never even...
That's right.
Yeah. The frauditor.
Mark Tucker. Tucker was Sam Page's guy, you know? So.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but I am glad that we are getting an audit in St. Louis County of that prosecutor's office, because the idea of putting people in prosecutor positions who don't want to do their job. Their platform is to not prosecute. Just like, you know, and we need to not have, you know, public officials who don't want to do their job. Hopefully we've learned our lesson.
Has the state auditor agreed to do the audit? I haven't heard that yet.
The council's going to do a resolution
Tuesday night asking him to do it.
Yes, and I think that is probably enough.
No.
And the county's willing to pay for it so that it just,
but,
we don't
but
get
But, Tim,
again.
Explain the dynamics here with the council that are now different. And, you know, there's more pushback against Sam Page, perhaps, than there's certainly been in the last.
If that's possible, yes.
Right. I know. But realistically, there are things that the council can do now that they couldn't do before.
Tuesday night, the new council was seated. So you have a new council member, Gretchen Bangert, from District 2. So I'm happy for the people of District 2. They now have representative government, because for the last 2 years, they've had nothing from Kelly Dunaway. And then Mike Archer, who replaced Ernie Trakas because he beat him in a primary, they both voted to override a veto of Sam Page's Tuesday night. And that was the very first overridden veto in Sam Page's administration.
Because Trakas always protected him.
That's right. Trakas would always protect him. Even if Trakas would vote no or yes on the original bill, he would always support Page during the veto to show
his
loyalty.
Does Sam have pictures of Ernie or something like that? What's up with that?
Sam has handled a couple little touchy things for Ernie. Mm-hmm. Was it $60,000 for his?
Yeah, the settlement for the sexual harassment case.
Yeah, that's public knowledge and public information. Used tax dollars to pay off someone that he allegedly sexually harassed. So, at any rate, so yes, he does have some allegiance. And I also think, you know, Ernie is an attorney. I'm not sure who would hire him because every piece of legal advice I've ever heard him give was wrong.
Correct.
And overturned. I don't know who would actually hire the guy, but apparently Sam Seriously. Would push work over his way. So that's that, and that's over with. So this is going to be a whole different council now because they have that veto-proof majority. So I think it's going to be a good year for the people of St. Louis County.
That is Tim Fitch, former county councilman and former county police chief. State Rep. Steve Butts is here, and Jane Duker. Let's segue now into your favorite topic and mine. That's the mayor of St. Louis, Jane Tisch, and her travel. I feel a little, you know, left out that we weren't taken on some of these trips. She also tweeted out that she's just been doing work nonstop. She doesn't take any
24/7.
Time off 24/7.
No PTO
for the city. And she's bringing home the bacon, apparently.
Well, I'd like to first comment on the PTO, because in the whole travel log that was released, and I encourage everyone to look at it, the St. Louis
It's good nighttime
Journal,
reading.
Yeah. And, I mean, the first thing is, what was not included in that travel log were her personal vacations. So there is more travel even than what is in that log. Like, for example, her birthday week when in 2022, when she had her birthday party and unfortunately former Representative Cora Faith Walker passed away. That whole week prior to that, she was in Jamaica with Miss Walker, and which is public knowledge. That is public. That was not on the travel log. The other concern I think that people really need, why they need to read about these trips, is who paid for them. So she said she paid for a lot. I haven't done the math yet, but I want to see how much money she really spent, because while she does make like $160,000, I still think the amount of travel she's claimed she paid for is a pretty steep amount for anyone who's trying to, you know, keep up a household.
If the math does not work out with
the math
that
does
either.
Not work out, in my opinion, but I want to do a deep dive on it. But, you know, who is paying for the travel? That bothers me. So, and I do need to check whether it's on her personal financial disclosure, because you can't just take free things from people without disclosing.
But the bottom line is, Steve, look, Rainford was on the other day. He was featured in the story about some of this as well. This is not normal for a mayor to take this many trips. Francis didn't do it. Lyda Crewson didn't do it. She's traveling all the time. She says she's doing it to help the city. Clearly, there are some meetings. I think they pointed one out in Dallas with Southwest Airlines. There's important business with the airport in the city. We can probably grant to some of these were legitimate trips that should have been paid for by the taxpayers, but not the extreme travel that she's done. So how do you defend that, right?
All right, I'm going to say it's only partially defensible. If the mayor is actively flying, I don't care really where she goes. I mean, if it truly is on city business and it is improving the lives of St. Louis citizens and bringing businesses in, you know, there's a lot to be said for face-to-face communication, right? We've kind of lost it during the COVID thing. Time to get it back. My point, I guess, at the end of the day, I don't really like the comparison with other mayors. So she has a different style. I'm good with that. I just look around and say, I don't see any real bang for the buck there. I don't.
Amen.
If we had been relocating a lot of, you know, major employers or something,
correct.
And people, and I'd say, okay, you closed the deal. And I'd say that was well,
but none
a
of
good
those
investment.
Were really. None of those were like
they didn't look like those kind of things. They were more like symposiums and meetings.
Not only that, but a bunch of woke nonsense symposiums.
Well,
and
keep
stuff
in mind,
like
here's
that.
The part that wasn't part of the story. She said, "But the taxpayers aren't paying for this travel,
right? That's
yeah. But
they're
you're
paying
still not
your salary.
At your job.
They're paying your salary,
and they're entitled to have you. Yeah. You know, 100% of the time.
I make the same argument about Sam Page in the hospital.
Absolutely,
we are paying your salary." You need to be doing the business.
Well,
of the city.
Karen Bass is a good example of this right now. And she knew she goes to Ghana. There's all these trips that these mayors take. She knew what was at stake. They knew several days in advance that the winds were coming, that there was risk for that. And I see a lot of similarities in the competence level of that mayor in Los Angeles and the one that we have here in St. Louis. But to your point, where is the ROI? That's the issue. I think
that's
we could justify
say.
Some of the travel and the relationships, but there doesn't seem to be an ROI. Oh, and beyond that, the basic services aren't being handled.
Correct. And I think people, that's why this, I think this story really hits people. This is something that people understand. This isn't one of those stories that the, you know, regular voters don't look at and say, wait a minute here. I mean, you're getting yours. That's what it looks like. It looks like it's just graft. It's like she wants to be out there gallivanting. And by the way, we all remember that she did this as treasurer.
Yeah.
And, you know, she went to Paris.
We went to France.
To look at parking meters. So the problem is, I mean, she's just lost credibility.
Consistent. She's consistent. This was a week, you know, with that story. Jacob Kim at the Business
Kern?
Journal did that one. Is it Kern?
Kern.
Kim. I
yes,
thought it was
Jacob
Kim.
Kern.
Is it really?
Jacob Kern. K-I-R-N.
I've always called him by the wrong name, and I apologize for that. But good journalism there by him, right?
Yeah,
and then good journalism by Lauren Traeger this week. You were featured in that story. Let's kind of segue to that. This is a terrible story about a couple of police officers in the city that rolled up on a guy that had allegedly or apparently committed suicide or tried to commit suicide. On the body cam, you can see that they didn't really care about the guy. They walk away. Let's say, let's circle back here because they were about to get off their shift and they didn't want to deal with it.
That's right. And this happened in Forest Park, in a very public area in Forest Park, right across from the hospital. And, you know, when Lauren first called me and asked me to talk about it, and I, you know me, I'm a big supporter of law enforcement. I'm not going to criticize, in most cases, law enforcement response. And this one, after I read the state's case, you know, because they're trying to, and they did take away at least one of the licenses of police officer licenses of one of the city officers. So these guys get this call. They roll in. They're the first ones there. There are two officers together. One has a body camera rolling. The other has no body camera. And basically, they find a guy shot in the head who's still alive. You can still hear him breathing, labored breathing, but he's breathing. And they say, oh, you know, he's got a through and through in the head. And the one officer says, well, let's get the heck out of here because we're getting off in 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So they turn around and leave him laying there. Don't call for help. Don't do anything other than look at him and say, let's get out of here.
And take a ride around the park.
And then the next officers who the assists show up and they find the guy, they do 100% the right thing. And that's what I told Lauren. You have to focus on that as well, that the other officers did 100% correct way to handle this. They
well,
start
she
taking
did.
Off.
It's stark when you hear the audio of what happened with the two cops that ignored it, and then you hear the other guys. And they, by the way, before their audio wraps up, they even say, hey, what's up with those two dudes?
They
right? They were acting
where'd
weird.
Where'd they go? They
right.
bailed.
And they noticed it. Yeah. And I'm,
so,
I was,
and then the supervisor apparently gets notified that this happened. He looks at the body camera and said, oh, they both lost their jobs, and they're probably both going to lose their peace officer licenses. And that's kind of where it ends at that point. But the surprising part for me is from the city, the response from the city leadership is there should have been some transparency, some communication with the family and saying, listen, this is what happened. Our officers didn't handle it properly. We've disciplined the officers. We're going to seek, you know, discipline on their licenses. And there was none of that. The response from the city when Lauren reached out to them was, we can't talk about this. It's a personnel matter.
Except they got the body cam footage.
Yeah, they did get the body cam footage.
You know, this, I mean, I cannot defend. No, I don't know anyone that
can
defend what they did.
We're all a group of people here who defends cops, and we appreciate law enforcement, but not in this case.
First of all, I don't even know I was a human being. You could roll
exactly.
up on someone
exactly.
and say, correct. I'm going to just let them.
My 12-year-old grandson would have ridden his bike there. He would have screamed for 911.
Absolutely.
For sure.
So I just can't even be in the place of a human being that could watch another human being in that sort of place and
so
not
they're,
do anything.
They're thankfully out of law enforcement, probably for good, as
forever.
They should be.
As they should
and,
be.
But I also think, you know, when is there going to be a reasonable, transparent policy on body cam footage? The good and the bad. I mean, you know, people, they bought those, they wanted and fought for those cameras for a reason.
Yeah.
I personally think they're great because 9 times out of 10, they exonerate good cops.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
You know, so why do we never get to see? How many years did it take to get the body cam footage in the school
case.
Shooting?
Yeah,
yeah,
Lauren
that was
just happened
yeah.
upon it reading the yeah. disciplinary actions on licenses.
But
like,
then she had to do a FOIA for the...
Well, absolutely.
But they gave it to her.
Yeah.
But if you did a FOIA on the CVAP shooting, you couldn't get the body cam footage. What are the policies, and when are we going to see more transparency on them?
Maybe at the school I thought it was because there's so many young kids involved. You know, I don't know. I thought maybe that was...
Yeah, you blur their faces.
Okay. But exactly.
The software exists to do that.
Hang Everybody tight. Knows. We got one more segment to go. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. Yeah, it's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday as we take you into the weekend. Jane Duker is here, State Rep Steve Butts, and former St. Louis County Councilman and County Police Chief Tim Fitch also with us this afternoon.
He needs a new gig. It's the last thing he's got to cover.
You've got plenty
resume.
Of work. That's right. Hey, speaking of gigs and stuff like that, one of your part-time gig, sort of, because you do work in insurance, Steve, is you're a state rep back at it in Jeff City this week. A new governor will be inaugurated on Monday. You got a new speaker in the House. There seemingly is, there are more adults in the room, perhaps, in the Senate, right? We have some hope for this session. What are your thoughts as we start a new legislative session?
So, I mean, this is my fourth and final term. Seems hard to believe. Time flies when you're having fun, right? But that being said, John Patterson, I think it's well known. He was just almost unanimously elected Speaker of the House. And there was a little bit of pushback, a little tiny civil war that went on the Republican side. And
not much, though, if we're being fair.
There were very little spark with the Sparks Rebellion. Yeah. That final vote, he got 10 votes, and John got 153.
But let me
going to be a good speaker.
Let me ask about this. The issue there was that there seems to be a feeling. Look, I'm pro-life, okay? But I also don't, and I don't think the people of Missouri like it when we vote on something and then all of a sudden the legislature goes in and tries to undo it right away. So one of the issues that Justin Sparks had with Mr. Patterson is the issue of abortion and what might proceed from here, right? And then he gets into, you know, Sparks gets in, I hate the rhino game. Oh, John Patterson's a rhino because he doesn't want to do that. I hate that. So I'm glad that Justin Sparks lost that battle personally.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's well known. I consider myself very pro-life, but Amendment 3 went to a vote of the people. People knew what they were voting on, and this is the law of the land, and even more so, it's in the Constitution now. So when these handful of state reps are going to say, you know, we're going to change it somehow, they're not. I mean, it is virtually unchangeable. The people have spoken. That's the way it is. To reverse it, it has to be another statewide vote to overrule this one. It can't be done at our level, and it's not going to be. It's made for good theater. It's a talking point. There are... I can't explain it all, but I really don't think that was the issue with Sparks. I really don't. He had to know he wasn't going to move the needle on Amendment 3. Yeah. He had to know that.
By the way, in the interest of full disclosure, I am Justin Sparks' treasurer.
Oh, are you really?
For his campaign, yes.
Well, you can tell him I don't like the rhino game. Send him a message for me, right? Because I think
Justin
that's ridiculous.
Justin is a former St. Louis County police sergeant. You probably remember his brother-in-law, Blake Schneider, mm-hmm. who was shot and killed in the line of duty. So Justin is a very honorable man. I will tell you that. I know that for a fact. I did not turn my back on him. A lot of his friends did during this whole uproar about the speaker's position. He knew that he wasn't going to win that. But he feels like he got some concessions as part of that. And they're going to revisit Amendment 3 and talk about, you know, what they could do to make Amendment 3 as pro-life friendly as they can, if that's possible to do anything with that. But that's so he feels like, even though he didn't become the speaker, I don't mean to speak for him because I don't, but I will tell you that he feels like he did accomplish some things as a result.
But why what annoys me is the whole Republican in name only thing. Stop that. Okay. Yeah, he can make the same points that he's trying to make, and he can do the same things without being a jackass on that. I don't like it.
There were some that were against Sparks that were saying the same thing about him. I mean, there was Republican friends of mine posting things on Facebook with Sparks with a clown nose and clown hair.
I don't like that either.
I don't either. A handful of goofy ones. I'll say for us in St. Louis, I'm thrilled. I think we have a clean slate. It's going to be, I think, a great 2 years. I am hopeful, but that Kehoe is going to be sworn in Monday as his swearing in. Several of us will be there for the inauguration.
Are you all going,
Jim? Right,
you're going too?
I am too.
Okay.
Yeah. And I obviously will be there. And you know, when have we ever had in a long, long time a governor who actually born in North St. Louis City has not forgotten from whence he came?
Yep.
And I think he's going to be that nice bridge between that rural urban divide.
And he'll get called a rhino for being that way.
Oh, he's already called a rhino.
Of course he will.
He will.
He'll be called a rhino because he goes down. He will communicate with people. I mean, you know, he's a hands-on guy. Has been. And
wants to,
you know,
get things done.
Right. And wants to actually have the ROI we've been talking about. And you know, am I going
to
like everything?
The city police department, too.
Right.
So that's his number one priority.
And it is
Tim.
His number one priority. And I hope with any luck.
I think it's going to happen.
I think it is, too. And I think it's going to happen before the mayoral election, which I think will be a very interesting dynamic.
By the way, back to that just for a moment, because there was some sort of event last night. Kara Spencer and the other candidates with Tish.
Yeah,
does anyone have a sense of how that went?
Princeton Heights down at the Check Hall right there in Kings Highway. I was at another meeting at the exact same time, but I knew several people in the room. They said, by all accounts, it was a very good forum. All four candidates were there. They all made good presentations. You know, obviously the mayor had the harder questions from the audience because she's got the record that she needs to defend. But that being said, it was very positive.
Why don't you explain the ranked choice voting, how that works?
I will. So I'm going to say it's not ranked choice.
Or whatever
it's,
they call
it's
it.
It's approval, more of a runoff thing. So we're going to have a primary in March. There's going to be four names on the ballot.
We no longer have municipal elections. They're not partisan. No one's a D, no one's an R. Of those four, you may vote for one, two, three, or four, anybody that you find acceptable. The top two vote getters will be on the general election ticket.
So you can
in
give,
April.
You can give four votes to Mike Butler, for example.
No, you cannot. You can only give one vote to one person.
All right.
You could vote for all four candidates.
Can you just vote
on
for
your
one
ballot
and not vote for the
Correct.
Other ones?
You could vote for one or two or three or four.
Now, this is the
That's
same thing
so
as outlawed
weird. That's
results
right.
in the state, right?
And you know what?
It
mean,
is.
How somebody hasn't sued about one person, one vote, because it does dilute people's vote. If you only vote for one person, your vote is diluted. Because if you vote for the top two, that vote is worth more. And so if there's any kind of communication gap as to whether, you can vote for four people.
Or the flip side, when we had a straight, party primary thing, it's happened several times in recent years, say two, three or four people run. You're the winner with 34.5% of the vote. Two-thirds of all St. Louis City residents or voters voted against you.
Each person's vote is not diluted. That's the problem.
I don't see how you're diluted, especially in the general election.
But that's not appropriate.
Is there anywhere else in the state now that has this type of voting? All the other ones have been outlawed with the new amendment, right?
Oh, that's correct.
With the constitutional
amendment.
And
that's
the thing is, too, so if let's say that you win with 99% of the vote and the other person in the primary only gets one vote, you still have to run against them in the general.
Not if there's two. That's not true. So if there's two people, there's only two people running for an office, which is in my ward, Ward 1,
right?
Ann Schweitzer.
Then there's no runoff.
Challenger. There is no runoff.
Yeah.
There is no primary vote. There's only a general election.
If there's only two people.
Correct. Right.
Okay,
Which
so if there's
sense.
Three people and still, that one person wins 90% of the vote. If you win 51% of the vote, you still have to run off.
Against the person that got...
Which,
by the way, just
is a waste.
To call it down here, the conventionalism would be Kara Spencer and Tisch will run off in
That's
April,
what I would
right?
think.
Chief, what do you think Barack Obama was saying to Hitler at the funeral yesterday? Any thoughts on that?
Wouldn't you love to have been a mouse?
Oh.
Yeah, I mean... It looked like they were having a good time. They belong to a very exclusive club. Let's face it. No matter what you feel politically or personally about that individual, there's only, five of you alive still that can talk about such things? So I think it's pretty cool that they can have a conversation.
Well, four out of the five could maybe talk
that's
about
right.
it. The
well,
one in the White
true.
House
one
currently, I'm not so sure could.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny because I felt the same way. When you're chief of staff for a governor, that is something that no one else on the planet will understand except other people who've had that job. And so even if you don't like someone, when we were transitioning, obviously to a different party after, Governor Holden didn't win. You still talk to those people. You still give them advice. You still want them to have you want them to succeed. And you don't get to that level of public service without wanting government to succeed. And so, I was happy that I don't know why people are so
obsessed. Well, I think Obama and Trump have known each other, even before Trump was in the White House as well. Listen, it was a great conversation. Chief, great to see you. Thank you, Tim. Happy New Year.
Same
Butts
to you.
Is going to hang out. We're going to talk a little about the insurance related to California in the 5 o'clock hour. So I thank you for that, but have
no
a great weekend. And
You're
Jane,
very welcome.
We're going to hang out and have some fun in the 4 o'clock hour. Hang in there. Wrapping up a Reardon Roundtable here on a Friday afternoon.
Get more at 971talk.com.